Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
And your home for Royals baseball.
Fastball hit high in the air, deep left field, way gone into the bleachers. A two-run homer for Bobby Witt Jr.
Watch The Drive by subscribing on our YouTube channel or listen on demand with the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is always going to stand on principles. Dippin' Dots are incredible. Red Lobster is the best restaurant that America has to offer, and baked beans are trash.
You're listening to Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan. Here's C-Dot.
I'm not even going to give you guys a normal open. The text line loves to act like I don't know what I'm talking about, and that's fine. I understand. That's the life that I've signed up for. That's the relationship that I have with the text line. I told you guys about Christian Pulisic just last week, and the text line scoffed at me. They laughed at me and said I didn't know what I was talking about. And then in the biggest United States soccer game, he was nowhere to be found. He was missing in action. We'll talk about him as the show progresses. We'll sprinkle in a little NBA. One of the great comebacks in World Cup history just happened. Argentina, they advance over Egypt. Argentina is going to play Saturday in Kansas City. Will Colombia meet them in Kansas City on Saturday? Their game is about to get going here in a couple of hours. My name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. We got a lot to get into in today's show. Rob is here as well. We are taking you up until 5 o'clock. The Royals have a 7-2 baseball game to lose. They will do so probably later tonight. Before we get to that and so many other things, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. And number three, and most importantly, I need you to remember that the open of the show is brought to you by our dear friends over at The Other Place. Now, just because the United States is out of the big soccer cup doesn't mean that you need to be out of the big soccer cup. So go over to The Other Place. Grab yourself a bite to eat. Grab yourself something to drink. We still have one more game at Kansas City Stadium. Why don't you go over to The Other Place? You can watch the game, get yourself something to eat, get yourself something to drink. Maybe you can stop in for lunch. Just whatever you do, make sure you go see our friends over at The Other Place. This is where I would like to begin. Now, many of you are probably thinking that I'm going to begin today's show by needling and ribbing Rob a little bit for his favorite team being busted out of the World Cup. But I don't have any of those feelings inside of me. I don't have any of those emotions inside of me. I think that you should be proud of this United States team. This is who I think they are. I think the United States is Texas A&M. Now, I don't watch a whole lot of soccer. I don't know all the ins and outs the way that some of you do. So the only way for me to understand soccer is to compare it to something that I do understand and something that I'm knowledgeable of. You know what I think the United States soccer team is? I think they're an 8 or 9 win college football team that got the right schedule and the right breaks, and they were able to make the college football playoff. We see this happen every single year. We see this happen every single season in college football. You're a good team. You're probably the 21st ranked team in college football. But you know what? You're in the Big Ten and you didn't have to play Ohio State. You didn't have to go on the road to play Michigan. You didn't have to go to a night game in Happy Valley and play Penn State. No, your toughest game was Iowa. You had Nebraska at home. you were able to navigate the board in such a way that you were able to accumulate a bunch of wins in conference play. And we look up and you think, huh, how is Purdue 11-1? They're making the college football championship. You're an SEC team that you didn't play Alabama, you didn't play Georgia, you had South Carolina, Tennessee, and Florida, and you caught them all on down years. The United States, up until last night at about 7:10, they were clearly better than every team they had played so far in the World Cup. So I do want to commend the United States. They dominated their group. They dominated the first matchup in the knockout round, and they were certainly a deserving team of being in the round of 16. It was obvious and apparent that the team that they played was noticeably better than they were. At almost every single turn, they looked bigger, they looked stronger, they looked faster, they looked more physical. Belgium was so impressive to me that the guys that they had coming off the bench were impressive. Like, we spent a lot of time these last couple of days talking about Balogun. And Balogun's a phenomenal soccer player. It looked like Belgium had five of them on his team. They had the guy that scored the two goals yesterday. They had two guys coming off the bench, two older guys. One of those guys, he looked scary to me. The guy who scored the last goal of the game and they were doing the Trump dance, that guy, he looked scary to me. He looked bigger and stronger and more physical than anybody on the American team. They also brought some other guy in. You could tell his skill level was just incredibly high. This United States team did exactly what they were supposed to do. They were built to get out of the group stage. They were built to capture our imagination. They were built to get you to believe in what they had going on. But this is likely how their story was always going to end. They were the 8-win college football team. They had a good regular season. They won a couple of games they weren't supposed to win. They got 10 wins. Next thing you know, you look up, and in the first round of the college football playoff, you got to play Oregon. And Oregon smoked your boots. Belgium isn't even a team that people think can win this thing. That's not France. That's not Spain. That's not Argentina. That's not a team that people before the tournament were laying money on to actually win this tournament. No, Belgium is a good team. And we saw there is a noticeable difference between being, I think, potentially at the top of that second tree. So not in the Spain, not in the Argentina, not in the France, not in the true actual contenders, but that second tier, there is a noticeable gap between being one of those teams and where the United States is. So I don't think there's any reason to hang your head if you were the United States. I think you competed. I think you captured the imagination of everybody. I think you got everybody excited. You gained a couple of fans. You created some stars over the course of it. But ultimately, the United States is a football team at a basketball school. I'm just going to guess at Duke. I don't think at Duke they really care if their football team wins the national championship. I'm going to guess that at Duke they don't really care if their football team wins the ACC. Now, no one wants their football team to be embarrassing. Nobody wants their football team to win two games, but can you win 7-8 games? Can you win at homecoming? Can you be fun? Can you be enjoyable? Are you a program that we want to go tailgate for? Are you a program that we'll throw a couple of dollars at? Because ultimately, you were just a time passer until we get to the sport that we truly love. And America is a football, basketball, and baseball country. Those are the sports that we really care about. Those are the sports that we really push our athletes towards. Those are the sports, ultimately, that we live and die with. It would be cool if we were good at soccer. These other countries that they're playing and other countries that are developing their talent, they need to be good at soccer. They will do anything to be good at soccer. Soccer is that thing that America picks up once every 4 years. It gives you a reason to wear that Old Navy 4th of July shirt. It gives you a reason to go buy some new USA stuff. It was America 250. You got to wave the flag. You got to wave the banner. You got to be patriotic for a little bit. And it is now less than a month away from the start of the NFL preseason. So I want to give Rob a chance. This is Rob's favorite team. I just want to give you guys my thoughts. They got their doors blown off them. That's probably how this thing was always going to go. They have clearly proven to me that they are a top 20 team in the world. And there are a handful of countries, a pretty decent handful of countries, that the United States is clearly better than at soccer. They are better than Australia. They're better than Bosnia. They're better than Turkey. They're better than a bunch of these countries. But once you start getting the money time and the teams that are really good at this and the teams that are truly elite at this and have generational players and have real superstars that kids from around the world know, there is a noticeable difference. Ohio State and Kansas are both playing college football. There is a noticeable difference. Missouri and Georgia are both playing college football. It's different down there. The expectations, the athlete, the resources, the infrastructure, it's different. Yes, the United States and Belgium are playing soccer. It is different over there than it is here. The last time that these two teams played each other, they played each other in February. Belgium beat the United States 5-2. They just beat them 4-1 yesterday. That game was never close, never competitive. Belgium scored within the first 10 minutes of the game. The U.S. got a lucky deflection. Belgium then scored a minute later, like they were even offended at the idea of the United States scoring on them. And then they toyed with them and they started dancing on them for the remaining 50 minutes of the game yesterday. They smoked the U.S. But you know what? It was fun. You got to go to Power and Light. You got to go to Fan Fest. You got to drink some good American beer. You got to celebrate. This World Cup was still what everybody thought it was going to. Before we started having this conversation, everybody we talked to, hey, what's your expectation for the United States? They met your expectation. They got out of the group. They got to the round of 16. It was fun. The ratings were good. Everybody should be happy with the way that the World Cup, at least domestically, has ended. Now, it's time for the countries that really, really care about soccer. The Colombias, the Argentina, the France, the Spains. It's time to watch those teams play in their sporting event that we are hosting. I want to get Rob's opinion next. I can read what you guys have to say. 913-586-7965. I really don't think there's any reason to hang your head. The United States at soccer is Texas A&M. They are Arkansas. They have some years in which they're pretty decent, but Texas A&M is not winning the national championship. Arkansas is not winning the national championship. There is a noticeable difference between those programs and the ones that you think can actually win something, that can do something truly meaningful. And we saw that yesterday play itself out in Seattle as Belgium boxed the United States all around the ring for 90 minutes yesterday. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on Kansas City's only FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in just a bit, I want to talk about this Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce wedding, because there's a group of people that are just, they're making a fool of themselves. I also think that we quite possibly saw the worst tweet in the history of the medium. There's so much to get into. So I want to tell you guys where we started today. I tell you guys this, I am not anti-soccer. It's just not my cup of tea. I've watched it. I've tried it. It's not a sport that I would follow on a regular basis. But for the World Cup, I've gotten into it. I've been watching it. I've been following it. I've been watching the teams and the players. So I feel kind of knowledgeable, at least, about this tournament. And I remember after the United States beat Paraguay, Rob, I asked you, hey, is this more about Paraguay, the fact that they could get beat 4-1 by U.S., or an example of the U.S. getting better? I do think the United States is better at soccer. I think their top end, their front end talent is noticeably better. But at least the appearances, they were beaten up on a lot of 3A schools. They eventually went up against Staley and they got their boots smoked in the game that mattered. That's how it appeared yesterday. You were beaten up on Bosnia. You were beaten up on Turkey. None of these teams people think are any good. None of these people think that they can actually make noise in this tournament. Belgium is a team that can make a little noise in this tournament. Belgium is a pretty decent team. Ranked top 10. There was a noticeable difference between the United States and Belgium in that game. It was not a fluke. If they played 10 times, I think Belgium beats them 8 or 9 times. It was not close. The U.S. did not attack. They were not aggressive. They did not get consistent shots on goal. Belgium dominated that game in almost every single way that you can dominate a soccer game. But I don't think that's a reason to hang your head. I think that the United States is a program. They are an 8-win college football program. And I think they're fine with being an 8-win college football program. As long as we make a decent bowl game every year and the donors are happy and the boosters are happy, I don't think you'll ever have problems if that's what you continue to do. They'll never fire you if that's what you are. I really doubt it. There's a higher ceiling for the United States in soccer. Since 1930, and that's a World Cup that had 13 teams in it, the United States has got past this round one time. They've got to the final eight one time since 1930. 2 years ago, they didn't even qualify for the World Cup. So to go from not qualifying for the World Cup to winning your group and making it to the round of 16 should be something that you should be proud of, something that you should commend, in my opinion. So I've given my opinion. There's a lot of things I want to talk about in today's show. We don't have a whole lot of time, so the show is going to be moving around, but this is your team. I know you were devastated. I know you were heartbroken to watch your team get beat up the way that they did yesterday. How are you feeling after watching the U.S. lose last night?
I mean, it's the same song and dance we do every 4 years. I thought this team would be different. They weren't different. They were the same as every other year, always, forever. It's frustrating. I echo a lot of what you said in the open about the United States. I will say, I don't know this is their ceiling, but I don't know that the United States wants to invest what it takes to make this not their ceiling. Because to your point about a college football program that is an 8-9 win team and they're happy doing that, there are some college football programs that will be 8-9 win teams forever and they'll throw parades. I don't mean any shade when I say this. That's K-State. K-State is consistently an 8-9, sometimes 10-11, but they are a team that consistently wins 8-9 games. They're never going to win a national championship, Manhattan, but they are elated every single season. Talk to any K-State fan about Bill Snyder, Chris Kleiman, Colin Klein. It is all rainbows and unicorns. Look how great our program is. There are also some programs that are 8-9 win teams on that same tier as K-State. And they get frustrated, they get angry, they get annoyed, and they run coaches out of town because all you're doing is winning 9 games. And there's a fear that, hey, what the other side looks like could be worse, but it could be better. What bothers me about the United States men's soccer team is they are content to always be, but from the casuals, around a 16 team. And the Federation, the people that run U.S. soccer, smile and nod, and they high-five in their offices. Hey, we gripped America. We got 30 million viewers. People love us. Everyone taps us on the head. Everyone's happy-go-lucky. We made the same spot. Maybe next year we'll give it another go. But good job, everyone. High-fives abound. They don't do any of the things required to fix the problem so that that is no longer their glass ceiling. And I am growing tired of every year getting excited to go kick the football like Charlie Brown and then falling short and then having the same conversations of this is just their ceiling. You know why it's their ceiling? They don't invest in the infrastructure. They don't invest in what it takes to be good at soccer. And they all seem to be content. Not casual fans, the people that run soccer in America seem content that this is their ceiling because it grips America every 4 years for 4 weeks.
We'll get back to the World Cup here in a little bit. There's a lot that I want to get into. There's a lot that I want to talk about today. We're off at 5 o'clock because of the Royals. So we haven't really talked a whole lot about it. We didn't get a chance to yesterday because we had a shortened show because of the Royals. The Royals just continue to throw a wrench in our plans on the show. So you guys know that Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, they got married. Congratulations to them. Now, when 1,000 people get invited to something, there's certainly going to be people a little mad. They're going to feel a way that they weren't one of those people. You knew eventually this was going to happen. Will Compton. Now, I know who he is, but I don't know who he is. Like, I'm not very familiar with his work. Like, I know he was in the league, and I know he does some stuff with Barstool, but I'm just not super familiar with the gentleman. He's mad, and he is having a one-sided argument. There's nothing worse on social media than when you're having a one-sided argument with yourself. Nobody is going back and forth with you. It's just you being mad online. So we started to see pictures of people that actually got the invite to the Taylor Swift wedding. He was not one of those individuals. So he started posting pictures online of him hanging out with Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. You know, they do that tight end university. Will Compton's been going to tight end university. So he felt like him and Travis were boys. So he tweeted out, "I don't think I've ever seen Dean Blandino at tight end university." All right. Then they got a TV show called Wake Up Barstool. Comes on FS1. So he was on there and he was talking about it. And Dave Portnoy, I'm sure you guys know who he is. They were kind of talking about it. "Hey, how did you not get this invite?" And they were kind of having a little bit of fun. Now, I think that Dave Portnoy was maybe having a little bit of fun in all of this. I don't think that Will Compton is having a lot of fun when it comes to this. They asked him if he thought this was personal. And then he and Taylor Lewan, who also played in the NFL, they're going back and forth. And he says, quote, "I'm looking at some of these names. Yo, we're boys. I've known you for over 10 years. We call and we text each other. I'm clearly doing something wrong in our friendship. Clearly something wrong. There's a blind spot that I'm missing." And then Lewan, in a real sucker move, then shows his text of him talking to Travis Kelce, telling him congratulations. And then Travis Kelce replies to it and says, "Thank you." This is what I don't understand about this whole argument. If you got Travis Kelce's number and you think you're boys, the wedding did not sneak up on you. They've been talking about this wedding now for 6 months. They've been talking about who, what, when, where, and why with this wedding. If you were expecting an invite and you started to realize that you didn't have one, why didn't you privately call Travis to figure out what was going on if y'all boys? Like, when Rob was getting married, I knew I wasn't in Rob's wedding, but I felt pretty confident that I was going to be able to go when he invited me to the bachelor party. I figured I was invited. If I hadn't have got an invitation, at some point, I just would have been like, "Hey, Rob, have you sent my invite? Where is my invite?" We just would have had that conversation. Maybe you're not boys because you're doing this kind of nonsense for the content and you're doing it for the clicks. You got Travis Kelce's number. If you said you've known him for 10 years and you text and you call each other, why didn't you have this conversation before in private? And now why are you having this conversation in public because you didn't get invited? It doesn't sound to me like you're upset that you didn't get a chance to celebrate their marriage. It sounds to me like you're mad you didn't get invited to all the celebrity party with all the important people, and you not getting an invitation highlights to everybody else that maybe you're not that important. That's how it reads to me. That's just my read on this situation. Rob, what do you make of this? I think this is corny behavior.
So I think two things can be true at once. First and foremost, I agree with you. This is performative by Will Compton, and I don't like that. I don't like that he took to social media to show his clout and how he's upset. There's definitely a way to handle this better than Instagram or Twitter. I agree. It's all performative, look at me BS. But I do think it's fair that he can feel a little bit of a way. If you're telling me Nelly and Ashanti and Joe Buck are invited, you could probably have anticipated an invite was coming. And I would tell you, it's a little bit in poor taste to ask if I'm invited to someone else's wedding. That's a faux pas, if you will.
I agree, but I guess I'm saying if it meant that much to you to go, and that's your boy, he's claiming they're boys. You call and text each other. Rob, what other man are you calling that you wouldn't consider a good friend? Text is a little bit different, right? We all text people. He says they call each other. He's invited him to his tight end university. So they got to have some personal relationship. That seems like a, "Hey, am I invited to the wedding? Am I on the list?"
At that moment, you're going to find out how Travis Kelce feels about you. You're going to find out where you are in Travis Kelce's life if you think you're boys and you didn't get invited. Because there's a lot of people who consider Travis Kelce to be their friend. He invited them. Mitchell Schwartz, we know privately the relationship between those two. He got invited. So Will just found out that, hey, that relationship was all in your head. Travis don't think y'all as cool as that. That's what it sounds to me. And this was the realization that he's having. So that's all I'm saying. Some of these things, you can just privately have these conversations. If you got these people's number, you know them, you got a relationship with them. You were just taking pictures with Taylor Swift in February. So you got to know them in some capacity. This was all a phone call. It should have been a phone call from the very, very beginning.
Or, like you said, the wedding hasn't been secret. It's not like, hey, you know, so-and-so is getting married this week. Oh, really? I didn't know. Everyone on earth knew when this wedding was, thanks to the Daily Mail and all those things. To my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong timeline-wise, last weekend Travis Kelce got married. The weekend before that was Tight End U down at Vanderbilt. Yep. Will Compton was at Tight End U that weekend.
Yeah, he was.
If you were a week away from the wedding and you hadn't been invited and you felt away,
you should have asked him right then and there.
Walk over and talk to him.
That's what I'm saying. You should have privately one-on-one had this conversation, not had it on television, not had it on Twitter.
Now, if that happened and Travis Kelce said, yo, we ain't like that, and you feel away because then you saw who got invites and you didn't make it.
He answered your question then.
He answered your question. You can still have feelings about not catching the invite, but you shouldn't go on social media to say, hey, why didn't I get an invite?
No, I'm with you. I feel like this is a very important message that I would pass this message on to everybody. This is a message that I think you guys should pass down to your kids and tell your kids this message. Everybody you're cool with is not your friend. I absolutely believe that Travis Kelce and Will Compton are cool, for sure. I believe they're cool. Hey, we can hang out. We can go do this. That person is not your friend. I got a big example. On his most important day, he invited Nelly over you. He invited Dean Blandino over you. Russell Wilson was at this thing.
That one's crazy to me.
How many conversations do you think that Travis Kelce has had with Jennifer Lopez? I'm guessing they really had a whole lot of conversations. She was at this thing. A lot of people were at this thing. He answers your question. Y'all ain't boys like that. Y'all not cool like that. Let me play two audio clips for you guys that has nothing to do with Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. Congratulations to them. I imagine they are having one of the greatest honeymoons that any two people have ever had in their entire lives.
St. Joe, Missouri.
Let me play this first one for you. This is from Taylor Twelman. We like him. We like Taylor Twelman. I like him. He's good. Let me play this for you. He talks about the U.S. failing their first test of the year.
That was the first real test of the World Cup. Yeah. What'd we get?
Yeah, I mean,
what'd we get? And listen, we've done stuff, right? We did stuff. You can't make mistakes at the highest level. You can't miss fundamentals. The first two goals from Belgium, they make you want to. It's not an easy watch, guys.
Yeah,
that's not an easy watch. That's a 50-50 ball inside the 18. That desk just looks around, lets it bounce, run through it. And listen, everyone on social media talks about, oh, Sebastian Berhalter this. Give me 10 Sebastian Berhalters. He'll run through the wall at least. You cannot forget fundamentals, the little things. That is going to be, for that group of players, the most difficult pill to swallow. Because when you watch the tape, it's not my experience. I watched it. That's a difficult one to swallow. Those are simple fundamentals, and we missed all of them tonight.
Two things. I got more audio to play. I'm no U.S. soccer historian. In fact, I don't really know if I could give you a memory from many United States soccer games past this one. I mean, I've seen the U.S. play other soccer games. That's just not really memories that I've stored in my mind. What happened on that third goal where the keeper didn't clear it and he like short-footed it and Belgium then got the steal has to be one of the five worst goals given up in modern United States soccer history. It has to be. I've never seen anything like that before. I mean, all of us are screaming, kick it out, clear it. Wait, hold on, what? They scored? I think at that moment, all of us had the exact same feeling. The same collective hope and excitement and, hey, they can win this game that America had going into it. I think we all at the exact same point. When they got down 3-1 and that's how they got down 3-1, I know you were thinking what I was thinking. Hey, pack these boys up. Hey, Chuck, where are they going to? Galveston. You had to be thinking the exact same thing that I was thinking. This is over. It was a fun run. It was enjoyable. But this part of our relationship, it's over. This fling that we've had with United States soccer, that was the end of it. That was the death. That was the start of football season. When they say, are you ready for some football? That's what they were talking about right then and there. That play. They didn't do any of the little things. I don't even know what the little things are in soccer. I know we didn't do them. That's number one. Number two, again, I don't know how shocking this can be. This is going to happen in college football. Rob, they were the team that went 4-0 in non-con, and then they got their first real test in early October and failed it. We see this happen every year in college football. You beat up on the Patsies. You beat up on the Cupcakes. And now it's October 11th, and you're on the road, and you're playing Texas. And Texas beat you 42-17. The United States had everything. They're the home team. They're in Seattle. Seattle might be the only city that loves the U.S. men's national team more than Kansas City. It's a perfect place for their games. Beautiful backdrop. Incredible. Amazing stadium. You got your best player back. You're at home. The vibes are high. You gave up a goal in the first 10 minutes. Just an absolute beatdown they put on you. That's really what it felt like. They were a college football team that racked up a bunch of wins in September against a bunch of Patsies. And in that first game, a conference play, they go on the road against Texas Tech, and they got the beats. Here's one more clip. This is from SportsCenter. This is Jeff Cameron.
We beat the teams that we were supposed to. Obviously, the Turkey A game threw a little curveball to us because we were able to rest our players. And thinking that when we rest our players, we'd think have a better performance against Belgium, right? But saying that, I thought we got to show our quality. We got to dictate. We were the ones that were the protagonists. We were the ones that were, we weren't underdogs really. And that's the difference. 2014, we were the underdogs. We went to the group of death. We were, you know, we've always, the U.S. has always been that underdog story. And this was the first time where people really said, hey, this team can do something great. And I think that's the thing that it just, it's going to leave that sour taste in your mouth. So now 4 years later, they're waiting for this next opportunity to go back in 4 years.
I'm a big believer that Vegas knows. Like, whatever you think you know about sports or predictions or whatever, Vegas is 30 times better than you at it. Like, they get it. They are perfect with it. It's hard to beat them consistently. A very small amount of sports bettors actually beat the book. Rob, Vegas thought these two teams were close. I mean, that's what the line says, right? The line says this was a coin flip kind of game. It didn't really feel like a coin flip to me. Like, maybe the line was just reflective of where we live and people want to bet on the United States. Like, no one wants to be in a position where they're rooting against the United States, so the book can't really offer you a discount in that regard. But, Rob, you're telling me that was a coin flip kind of game? Because maybe I'm crazy. And I don't think the U.S. played well. I think Belgium would beat them 8 times out of 10 at a minimum. I think they beat them 9 times out of 10. I think Belgium is noticeably better than the United States.
I think Belgium is better. I think that was, I don't know, 8 of 10. I think it's more like 6 to 7. I think the United States folded in the moment. And you see that in sports all the time. Teams are, oh, these teams to be equal. It's an NCAA tournament game. It's the Sweet 16. They look equal on paper, and one team just absolutely does not rise to the occasion. Belgium is better. They were way better yesterday, no doubt about it. I think they are closer than most people think. This is not the end-all, be-all metric, but someone on social media said this, so I apologize for not crediting properly, but I saw this. If you take the starting 11 for the United States and you put them into this thing that gives the true value of the players in the open market,
basically Belgium's roster and the United States roster is like $250 million, $270 million. They are very equal as far as how third parties view them. It's just the United States had its worst day ever and Belgium took advantage. I do believe Belgium is better, but I don't believe it's by that margin 8-9 times out of 10.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Jason Davis. He covers soccer for SiriusXM FC. We'll get his thoughts on the World Cup. We'll get his thoughts on the United States as they are removed from this tournament. Coming up on the other side, one of the great comebacks of our generation, Argentina. They were down 2-0 in the 70th minute today against Egypt, and they roar back and score 3 goals in 20 minutes to win that game 3-2-2. And Lionel Messi just continues to show he is one of the greatest athletes that we have ever seen. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
Tune in to hear the Hall of Fame voice of the Royals, Denny Matthews.
There's a high fly ball, deep left center. Back goes Ward to the wall. Gone, Bobby Witt Jr.
Every Monday at 3, right here on your home for Royals baseball. 96.5, The Fan.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Rob, I just saw this on the timeline. I actually did not know this existed until about 30 seconds ago. There's Big 12 Media Days going on right now? It's this early? We're already here? Big 12 Media Day? Is that real? I'm not trying to be funny. I had absolutely no clue that the Big 12 Media Days, I mean, I knew it was coming up soon. I just thought it would be like the middle of July, not days after the 4th. So they just left their 4th of July with their family and they just got on the plane and it's time to do the media interviews during the middle of the World Cup. Like, who's paying attention to this at this point?
I mean, the Big 12 should be happy no one's paying attention, because Brett Yormark's comment on Brendan Sorf today was yuck.
This is why, and I'm not here to defend the media. I guess I am maybe a little bit. Now let me paraphrase it. But the Big 12 commissioner was asked about Brendan Sorsby today. Quote, "Today is not the time to address that issue. Today is about celebrating the upcoming football season and celebrating our 16 schools. When is the time to address the Brendan Sorsby situation if it's not at Big 12 Media Days?" Like, I know you guys might not believe this, but your questions as an interviewer are really only as good as the person answering the questions and how much they are willing to share. That's it. That's really what it is. Do you know that person? Do you have a rapport with that person? Or, in a lot of ways, are you famous enough to get them to answer honestly and openly? That's really what interviewing is 80% of the time. There's more, but that's a big part of it. I'm imagining this was a regular question that the commissioner should want to speak on. If he doesn't want to talk about it, when is the time to talk about it? If it's not then, the Brendan Sorsby issue, I mean, we all know how this is going to go. I always say you never really ever have to answer anything. You never have to. All you have to do is no comment and move on, and then people will get tired of it and say you're beating a dead horse. Mike Vrabel will never have to answer another Diana Rossini question. Football will be here. He'll get asked about it. He'll say he's not talking about it. And then your fan base will then say, quit picking on him. Quit beating a dead horse. So, I mean, Brett Yormark will never have to answer the Brendan Sorsby question. So I just saw that and it distracted me. I apologize. Might as well keep it with Big 12 sports while we're thinking about it. Have you been keeping an eye on Darren Peterson?
In his 2 summer league games? Yes. I'm aware that he's hooping. You know what it looks like when he's healthy? He can hoop.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure wish he had done that in December.
I have a list of games I would like to see this happen.
Sure wish he had done that in January. Been great in February.
Remember that game at MSG against Duke? Would have been fun to see then.
Probably would have won that game. Had this version of Darren Peterson been there? This version of Darren Peterson, he's hooping. He's been the best player in summer league. I know it's just 2 games. It's early, but no, Darren Peterson has been fantastic in these games. Now, I mean, it's it's July basketball, so I don't know how much you can put into it. But after the game, they kind of asked him, and he said, quote, "I say this all the time. I'm a Kobe guy. Anytime I can assert dominance, I try to. So at the end of games, I try to kill." My brother, at the end of the games at Kansas, you tried to find the bench. I don't want to hear this, dog. I really don't. I know it doesn't matter to me anymore. He's out of my life. He's off my team. He's out of our city. I don't care. It don't matter to me. I don't care. But just still, it's just at the end of games, I try to kill. Bro, you was checking out of games. What are you talking about? Okay. I mean, good luck to you with the Utah Jazz. I hope everything goes well. But he is hooping. I have not watched a game yet, but I have seen both of the highlights for him. I actually probably will watch him this week in Summer League. And now he's been balling. I'm here to tell you. He's off to a fantastic start so far in Summer League. Rob, I actually did not get a chance to watch this game, but I was keeping an eye on it. I was, you know, keeping the track of the score. What happened at the end of the Argentina game? Because it looked like Argentina was about to be sent packing, and then next thing you know, they just went on an absolute blitzkrieg bop at the end of that thing and dominated.
I mean, it was, we were watching out in the newsroom, Spec, I, some of the people from KMBZ, they were down 2-0 in the 77th minute, and they won in regulation.
That's hard to do.
It's very difficult. I mean, it's a duh comment by me, but Lionel Messi started playing at a level that just, it was wow. They put him on the right wing. He had a quick assist to cut it to 2-1. Then he made a couple plays down the wing. It led to 2-2. It just, he scored the goal. It just, he flipped a switch and Argentina joined him and Egypt could not match the intensity. And now, I know post-game, one of the Egypt players claimed the game was rigged. Come on now, stop it. I mean, just, the game's the game. But
I'm so happy, honestly, to find out that the rest of the world is just like us. That's what I'm really happy to, you know? The rest of the world thinks that the league is rigged to make sure that certain teams advance and they don't advance. The rest of the league hates instant replay. I'm just so happy to realize that even though it's a different sport, even though it's a different culture, climate, all of those things, I'm just happy to know that in the end, sports fans are sports fans, and getting busted from the tournament and then claiming that it was rigged when you had a 2-0 lead with less than 15 minutes in the game and lost. I mean, that tracks to me. That actually makes a lot of sense. It really does. That makes a lot of sense to me. That seems fair. Now, I want to save some of my Christian Pulisic stuff, but I want to talk about it a little bit here. Now, again, I say this as somebody that I don't watch a whole lot of soccer, but the best player on Holland, or on Norway, excuse me, Erling Haaland, it's noticeable. You don't got to know a whole lot about soccer. If you watch them play, it'll be pretty clear who the best player is. If you don't know a whole lot about soccer and you watch Argentina play, and I say, hey, maybe the greatest soccer player in the world is on their team. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, I'll watch it. I think you'll notice pretty easily, oh, that's who you're talking about. Kylian Mbappe is another one of those guys. Like, he different. For all the conversation that we've had about Christian Pulisic, I've never seen him do anything to make me think that he's different. I've never seen him do anything to make me think that he is a star. Rob, you've been telling me about Christian Pulisic now for 6 years. You have been telling me about him. You've been telling me how it's next up, how he plays at Chelsea. I've been hearing all of these things about Christian Pulisic, and great. Hey, I don't got nothing against the man. I don't really know much about him, to be completely honest with you. But now when it's time to show up, I mean, this is the time to show that you are an elite soccer player. And I'm seeing all of the guys from Brazil, Vinny, showed up, played at an incredibly high level. Yamal on Spain, Kylian Mbappe, Erling Haaland, all of these dudes that soccer people tell me, hey, he the truth, he different. I thought Christian Pulisic was one of those guys. I thought he was going to be a star. I just don't see it. It does not jump out to me. Maybe he will do all those things in the games that I don't play. And that's possible. I don't know. I don't watch the EPL. I don't even know what other team he's on. I think he's on Chelsea. Maybe he's not on there. I don't know anything about him. I'm just telling you, every time somebody has told me, watch that dude, I've never seen him do what you guys told me he's supposed to do. I just don't see it. It doesn't jump off the screen the way it does with all of these other countries and their best player. So if you had told me coming into this thing, that's the United States' best player, it's Christian Pulisic, it explains why when they played an actual good team, why they got dominated the way that they did yesterday. Coming up at the top of the hour, we are going to head to the phone lines. We're going to be joined by Jason Davis. He's with SiriusXM FC to get his thoughts on the World Cup and what happened yesterday as the United States got trounced by Belgium. Keep it right here, Sadrive.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.